The news industry got off to a brutal start in 2024 with hundreds of layoffs, and the trend has not let up, not surprising given the last couple of decades. If you read a local newspaper, chances are you've seen it get smaller over the years, with fewer pages and fewer local reporters filling the pages that are left. In her book, Hedged: How Private Investment Funds Help Destroy American Newspapers and Undermine Democracy, author Margot Suska writes that these changes have been part of a new era of journalism, an era that she says needs to end. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Suska will be in Cincinnati for an event April 11th to discuss her book, which examines the last 20 years of American chain newspaper ownership and investment. Joining me in this recorded interview is American University Assistant Professor of Journalism, Accountability, and Democracy, Margot Suska. Welcome to the program, Margot.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
Well, it's great to have you here. I thought your book was fascinating. As I mentioned, in January of this year alone, more than 500 journalists were laid off. Does this feel unprecedented to you?
Unfortunately, it doesn't. I mean, I have a chapter in the book called Layoffs because I think that that's been really one of the hallmarks of the last 20 years. And I think that what's worse about the layoffs is that when you look at some of these corporate executive bonuses and some of the dividend payments that these executive firms and corporate firms have taken, what's worse is that there's been money at the top, but journalists who do the real work of democracy have been laid off and have suffered. And I think that's a real problem, is that we, you know, a lot of the conversation about the layoffs in journalism make it sound as if the industry is this dead and dying business. But a lot of people forget that there's money in journalism going to executives. And I'll give you an example. Gannett's CEO, Mike Reed, in 2021 had a compensation and bonus package worth $7.7 million. So, you know, I hear these numbers, and it's been a hallmark of the last 20 years. But in reality, you know, there have been people who've been making money off of journalism. Unfortunately, it just hasn't been the right people.
Well, when we're talking about layoffs of journalists, the reporters and editors who are creating this content, they're on the front line. What kind of impact does all that cutting have on our democracy, in your view, especially in a presidential election year?
Yeah, and I think the consequences are just, you know, we're just starting to really understand what those consequences are. And you're talking about from 2005 to this year, the loss of tens of thousands of reporters. And what that means, you know, net over, you know, over the span of the United States are people who cover everything from local elections guides to help you understand, you know, who the folks are who are running for your school board, for your county commission, running for mayor, running for state office. And of course, you know, understanding more about people who are running for, you know, representative and Senate, and you know, not to mention some of the highest, you know, positions in the land. But why it matters for democracy is that people are not, they know less about the issues that are happening in their communities because newspapers are providing less of that information. And newspapers are the window for other media outlets. Lots of television news comes from newspapers. But I'll give you an anecdote. I used to cover education in South Florida, and I was at the time one of three education reporters in an area about the size of Rhode Island. And about 15 years after I had left, a journalist who I had mentored at American University took the education job in that newsroom. She was then the only reporter covering that same region. So there used to be three of us, then there was only one. And you can train the best and brightest journalists. You can train them in multimedia and investigative journalism and data journalism. But the reality is stories will be lost. There will be people stories who don't get told, investigative stories that don't get pursued because there just aren't enough people to do it. And there aren't enough reporters to do that work. And that's a function of corporate journalism.
I want to get into the inner workings of what's going on with these layoffs. Let's talk about what you focus on in your book, the ownership of these private investment firms. What started you on this path to kind of sort through all this and do all this research?
Yeah, well, I wish I could say that, you know, I sat down and started looking at the private investment funds first, but it was a little bit of a winding road that led me to start looking at the private equity firms and the hedge funds that are really, you know, calling the financial shots behind some of the chains that, you know, that we know so well. Gannett is one of them, of course, which owns the Cincinnati Inquirer, and today Tribune, which owns my hometown paper, the Hartford Current, both of which I think we could argue are shells of them, you know, of their former selves. So I started looking into, was asked a question during an interview years ago about the loss of reporters. And I started looking at into the documents of chain newspapers. And I was very interested in chain ownership, was very interested in layoffs, but it became hard over the course of the months that I was doing this research. You couldn't get away from these private investment funds and hedge funds. They just became too, I mean, they were everywhere that you looked, literally at every turn. And that's when my research really focused on not the chains, not the Gannetts, the Media News Group, the Tribune, but became focused on the institutional investors and the private equity firms and the hedge fund owners. You know, this class of wealthy, you're talking about some of the wealthiest firms, you know, in one of the wealthiest industries, not just in the United States, but in the world, that really have so much decision making over a huge chunk of American newspaper and in reality, television journalism. So my research really went in that direction. And once it started going in that direction, it just didn't stop, because it was clear that then everyone I talked to who had been in the industry had a story about, well, you know, this happened when I worked for this newspaper, and this happened here, and let me tell you this story. And then the documents, you know, I just followed the trail of the documents, which, you know, that told its own story. I think I used somewhere in the neighborhood of 25,000 pages of SEC documents and bankruptcy court records to put most of the chapters together for this book.
Your book describes how private investment firms have kind of scooped up media companies, sucked revenue out of them, and treated them like any other business that these firms have gone after over the past few decades. Explain why you think media companies and newspapers should be treated differently from other businesses.
Listen, I want to say I think that the way private equity and hedge funds operate is disastrous for just about any industry that they're in, whether or not that's nursing, whether or not that's private hospitals, whether or not that's, you know, in the sectors that they operate in, there are worse consequences for those firms. So I'm not just saying that they shouldn't be involved in news as an industry. I think that there are real consequences for these types of firms' entry into the markets that they're in. And there's very little oversight of these types of private investment funds, in part because they are not really defined in any laws. So that's one thing that I would say. It's not just that I think that they should be kept out of news. I think there needs to be real oversight of the way these firms operate, which uses borrowed money, often called a leveraged buyout. But I think there needs to be real oversight over their profit above all else mentality. Because you wouldn't want your parents in a nursing home of a company that's owned by a firm like that. You wouldn't want your child treated at a hospital that put profit above all else. I wouldn't anyway. So when it comes to news, what's most troubling to me about these types of firms owning the news or being heavily invested in the news is that now we have the one system in the United States that's meant to be a check on government. It's meant to be a check on industry. And now those systems are there. These for-profit entities are there. And what worries me is that we have this one system that's now being corrupted by these for-profit entities, and their watchdog function is being slowly and slowly eliminated. Who gets to tell the narrative? Who gets to tell the story when news organizations that used to be giving voice to the voiceless. They used to be, you know, telling stories of corruption across business and government. My concern now is that you have these firms which have their hands across businesses. They pay lots of money to lobby politicians. You know, my concern is that they have no business being in news.
We're talking in this recorded interview about what's been happening to local newspapers over the past 20 years and what the future holds. You know, Margie, you just mentioned profit above all else. And since the beginning of newspapers, your book points out the people and companies who've owned them have made money from them. You call this the private investment era for journalism. What makes this era different in your mind?
Yeah, and I have a chapter on that, which looks historically that, you know, names that some of your listeners will understand, you know, will be familiar with. Benjamin Franklin, you know, his ownership of a newspaper in Philadelphia. He made a very hefty sum from his ownership of that newspaper. The Pulitzer family, the Hearst family, these are still names that we know today in American journalism. They became very wealthy off of their ownership of American newspapers. But I think that the difference today is that there was a certain mission during those other eras of journalism. There was at least a mission, you know, even when there was a partisan press, you know, the mission of, you know, setting your agenda above the, you know, the other political parties. But today's mission is profit for profit's sake alone. And it's actually driving these newspapers and news companies into the ground. So what's left really is just a barren wasteland. You know, after Alden Global Capital is done with Tribune, there will be a Tribune that is a much, much shakier company. And in my opinion, and based on my research, it has less to do with the marketplace and more to do with the way they have slashed and burned that company into nothing. You know, they've sold off assets, they've laid off staff, they've left an audience wondering what the heck happened to my newspaper and not really caring, you know, at all about the mission of this once venerable newspaper company in American democratic society. So I think that's the real difference. Profit has long been a part of American journalism, but now what you have is profit just for profit's sake. And really what's happening is the complete destruction. And as trust is also plummeting. And I think that those two things are, you know, are going to be, they're going to have disastrous consequences moving into an election year and you know, for years ahead.
Who have you reached out to from these media companies, the chains like Gannett, Tribune, and from these hedge funds like Alden? Who have you reached out to from those businesses to kind of explain themselves in this whole system?
So I've reached out to none of them because as far as I'm concerned, I am not an objective journalist. I am a critical communications scholar who uses investigative reporting techniques. And by that, what I mean is I don't consider this an objective piece of journalism that's going to be, you know, their side of the story and what 20 years of investigative research shows. So I didn't need to reach out to Alden Global Capital's head for them to say, we love local journalism. We think we saved local journalism, when what all the records and what all the other interviews show is that their tenure has been an absolute disaster. I didn't feel any obligation whatsoever to allow their sound bites or to allow their spin into the book. Because as far as I'm concerned, we've lived reality for 20 years. And that reality is diminished local news. It's an increase in political polarization as people step away from local news. We have increased voter apathy in places where we have the loss of local news. And I didn't really feel any need to call them and allow them to say, hey, let me tell you what we've done for local news. I think the numbers and the records speak for themselves, and the records don't lie.
You mentioned all these filings that you've looked through, these thousands and thousands of pages of documents. In any of that, do these companies try to make the case that, hey, the media industry was so poorly managed that these cuts were bound to happen and we were just the people who were trying to right the ship? Or are they trying to make a case like that?
No, actually, in one case, Fortress Investment Group, which is a New York City-based private equity firm that was at one time the owner of the Gatehouse chain and then a majority shareholder of Gatehouse, which is effectively now Gannett. It merged with Gannett in 2019. And several points in their SEC documents, Securities and Exchange Commission documents, they say, we have no, basically we don't know how to run a media company. We don't know what we're doing running a media company. Don't hold us to running a media company. Basically, we're clueless.
I started working as a reporter before the internet existed. And the story we've all heard for many years was that the internet and sites like Craigslist were responsible for the demise of newspapers, or rather newspapers' failure to react to the internet and sites like Craigslist. Explain what you found when researching your book and how you think the internet fits into all this.
Yeah. And I think so, you know, you and I came up, you know, probably around the same time. My first internship, I remember there was one computer that had internet access and, you know, no one ever really used it. It was this kind of anomaly because, you know, it wasn't really a thing in the 1990s. But yeah, I agree with you. There's this conventional wisdom, and I started seeing it more and more in journalism studies scholarship and a lot of things that I was reading, which is, it's as if, you know, the internet gets plugged in and all of a sudden this, you know, this loss of advertising revenue to the sites you mentioned, Monster.com, eBay, Craigslist, just automatically took down newspapers. And I think that that oversimplifies what was happening. And what it also does is it lets off the hook all of these corporate executives and not to mention private equity investors who were trying to keep these double-digit profit margins from the late 1990s. And what it does is it stops any discussion of what was happening in these boardrooms. So what I did was went back through bankruptcy court documents and went back through annual reports. And what I showed was that as the internet was becoming more important and as these sites were getting more and more, you know, taking more of the revenue stream, these executives chose mergers and acquisitions as the strategy to move ahead. So there was no real digital innovation coming from any of the major newspaper chains. Most of those major newspaper chains had major private equity firms as investors. And those investors were putting huge pressure on newspaper executives to maintain profits that they had before the internet transition was coming. And so what I did was use documents to show that there really wasn't this digital innovation. We could have competed with Craigslist. We had a monopoly on classified ad revenue. We could have competed and we did nothing. So we saw a string of mergers and acquisitions, you know, Knight Ridder merging with McClatchy, Gatehouse buying up a ton of papers all over the country. And what that did was it put newspaper companies in debt by the billions of dollars. And that debt came right as the 2008 Great Recession happened. And that was almost too much for most newspaper companies to get out from underneath. Then you had another class of hedge funds that specialized in distressed debt investing that chose newspaper companies specifically in order to try to go after those. The internet was crucial. The loss of advertising revenue was crucial, but not, I don't think, for the reasons, you know, it didn't happen on its own.
There are still talented journalists doing good work at many local papers. How can readers and communities support them and support that work?
Yeah. Well, this is, you know, I think I was just talking to a group of international journalists yesterday, and one of the stories that I chose to highlight was the Indianapolis Star's reporting on USA Gymnastics and Larry Nassar. And, you know, that story doesn't get done without the tenacity and the hard work of Gannett journalists, you know. And I recognize that a company that I'm frequently critical of, you know, that story is responsible for really putting Larry Nassar behind bars and for holding USA Gymnastics accountable for its egregious actions. So 1,000 new subscribers could take on a Gannett subscription tomorrow. And is that going to fund better local journalism? I just don't see evidence of that in any of the records that I've looked through. So I think what I would say to your listeners is support your public, you know, your public radio, support your public media stations. I think that there's a growing movement to support nonprofit media. And I think that these are organizations that are much more transparent about their funding, much more transparent about their staffing and about their accountability work. But I do think, you know, we're at a crossroads. And I think that we're going to have, you know, we're going to have some moments of discomfort moving ahead, looking at what the next, you know, best model will be. But I guarantee you, it's not going to look anything like, you know, the newspapers that you worked at and that I worked at, you know, 20 years ago.
You talk about how this era of journalism needs to end. What do you think is coming next? I mean, we have all these nonprofit news organizations that you mentioned, but we're also seeing billionaires and corporations starting media companies. What era do you think we're going to be moving into with journalism?
So that's a great question. I've spent the better part of the last 13 months traveling around the United States, talking to newsroom owners, talking to newsroom founders. I've been to 6 or 7 US states, trying to look at different models and study different business models. And so I'm really hopeful about what I'm seeing. But I think that one of the big takeaways that I've come away from in this and in that work is ongoing, is that what works in Portland, Maine is not necessarily going to work in Cincinnati and may not work in Boise. So I think that, you know, I think we have to look at a much more fragmented audience. You know, I think gone are the days where we had, you know, the Walter Cronkite or even the regional news. I think we're going to look at, you know, very specialized local outlets. And I think that, you know, that's going to be potentially very good for local communities. However, what worries me about that is it going to have the same level of accountability? Is it going to, you know, force the politician, if they do the investigative stories, you know, to make changes? Or is it going to get the corrupt person out of office? I don't know. Is it going to have that same staying power?
Well, I've been talking with American University Assistant Professor of Journalism, Accountability and Democracy, and author of Hedged, How Private Investment Funds Help Destroy American Newspapers and Undermine Democracy, Margo Suska. Margo will be in Cincinnati to discuss her book on Thursday, April 11th. You can find a link with more information on our website, wbxu.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.